symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
As cold as a razor blade, as tight as a tourniquet, like the skin on a dying man. I don't want a piece of the world. I want the whole world. I make my own rules because it's much easier that way. Trust me.
What's up, everybody? It's Marcus D'Angelo. We are back for another episode of The Snake Pit. And of course, I'm joined by the master of the DDT, the guy fresh off of AEW TV. It's Jake the Snake Roberts. What's up, Jake?
Oh, man. How you doing, man?
Man, I could not possibly be better, but certainly not as good as you. You were just on national TV, and Jake, not only did you, of course, get to make an appearance in front of that national audience, but you got a little revenge against not one, but two people. Can you tell us about that a little bit?
Yeah, man, just not going to take any more bullshit. Basically, if somebody does something, I'm going to walk over there and knock the dog shit out of them.
Now, Lance Archer might not like you getting involved while you're on the outside, but I can say pretty definitively that the fans seem to like it.
Yeah, the fans love it. And I wish they didn't, but Archer just needs to bite the bullet and let me go ahead and do what I'm going to do.
Man, I couldn't agree more. Plus, I think everybody, I heard some DDT chants whenever you punched Prince Nana the other night. So it's like, hey, something might be coming.
You never know.
That's the thing about the DDT. You just never know when you're going to get it. But I'll tell you what, we do know what we're going to get here on the show because this week we are taking our second look back at Mid-Atlantic Wrestling in late 1981 after you just arrived in the territory. This month it's September into October. And, ordinarily as I'm going through this stuff, I'm like, it's kind of the same month to month. He's working with the same guys. They have long programs here. Nope, not in this case. You are all over the place. You're bumping up against some real legends, and I cannot wait to talk to you about it this month, brother.
Let's do it.
Okay, so at this time, Austin Idol is in the territory, and he's a guy we will likely not have many opportunities to talk about here on the show. An impressive look, a good promo, and a guy who clearly had some staying power because he's still active in pro wrestling today with NWA. Here in October, you'd work a singles match with him. Did you get much time around him, and what did you think of his work?
Oh, his work was, let me see how I can say this. It was paper bag worthy.
Oh, wow.
He's a showman.
Yep.
That's it. He's not going to give you a bunch of wrestling. And whatever he does is done with kid gloves.
Okay. So you'd be out there with him waiting for something, and he's coming at you a little late.
Yeah. He wouldn't break no eggs.
You were not the first person to talk about him in those terms. I think it was Jerry Lawler or somebody like that described him as being a marginal worker who really got by on looks and his promo skills. I mean, obviously the full package is ideal in wrestling, but I'm curious about your opinion, Jake. Is it more important to be a great worker or to have a strong character like Austin had?
I think it's more important to be a great worker for longevity.
Ah, okay.
You might have a look. How long is that look going to last? 5-10 years?
That's a good point.
And the upkeep on that's a lot harder than learning how to work.
I heard Scott, I think it was Scott Hall, once said, it was like Kevin Nash came out and he was like flexing as they were getting ready to go to the ring or something. And when they got backstage, Hall was like, hey, man, don't flex. He's like, because your body's going to be the first thing that goes.
Yeah.
Which is just smart. Like, it's, kind of protecting yourself and your longevity if you're not making it yourself a body guy in wrestling.
Absolutely.
Now, here in Mid-Atlantic, did you feel like a limited work rate like Austin had would create a ceiling for him? Or, was he, do you think he was gonna go on to have success regardless of not being a technician?
He wasn't going to be there long.
Ah.
I dreaded working with him. Did. And personally, he's a great guy. I had no bitch with him, no beef, nothing. But working with him is a lesson where you have to work around him.
Gotcha.
That's the key. If you cannot work around him, you're done.
Now, I've heard guys like Ted DiBiase describe working around a guy like Junkyard Dog, which is essentially, Ted described it as you put him in the center of the ring and you just take bumps around him. It was the same deal with Austin Idol.
Yep.
Gotcha. So probably not a super easy night off for you.
Nope.
Now, Jake, while we're on the subject, did you ever get the full story on Austin Idol's plane crash with Gary Hart and Bobby Shane?
I've heard that story from Gary Hart. And it was a horrible story, man. Wow. You surprised me with that one.
Yeah, Bobby Shane would actually be killed in that crash. Did you get to know Bobby Shane at all?
No, I never met Bobby.
Okay. Yeah, it's as I was doing research on this, they were saying like the guy seemed like he had this super bright future, so pretty crazy thing to have happen.
Yeah, he had a great future in front of him, man, and he got pinned in the plane, man. And his greatest fear was drowning. And that's how he went. He drowned.
Dude, that is terrifying. I didn't know that detail.
Yeah. Gary Hart actually went back to the plane twice and pulled people out.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So that's kudos to him. I believe he got Idol out of there. He's gonna need somebody else out of there too. Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah, I know that Idol did not want to fly for a long time after that, and I mean, hard to blame him.
Yeah, can you blame him?
I know that you and Cheryl would fly with Ronnie Garvin, but aside from that, were you ever getting on those small, kind of more dangerous planes?
Yeah, I've done it several times.
Nerve-wracking for you?
Not so much.
I mean, the odds are against you ever getting into a plane crash, even on one of those smaller planes. But man, that is after Ric Flair getting in one, and then of course this awful story about Bobby Shane, it's like, I'd probably think twice a little.
You might think about it. You just got to be comfortable with who's flying the damn thing. Trusting them. And I trust Ronnie Garvin totally.
I mean, after the way that he had protected you in the ring, so to speak, yeah, I guess you could probably trust him. Although, I don't know, sometimes you guys really beat the shit out of each other.
Yeah, we did. We enjoyed.
Well, on the final episode of September 81, you are all over the place creatively. You're continuing the issue with Ole Anderson and Piper, but you're also a run-in at the end of a match won by the Grappler and the Super Destroyer to try and scuffle with them for cheating to win. We know that you're still tight with the Grappler, Len Denton, to this day. But let's talk about the Super Destroyer a little bit. What can you tell us about Scott Irwin?
Big son of a bitch, man. He was big, good worker, smooth. Hated his finish. God, I hated his goddamn finish.
What was it?
Superplex.
Oh boy.
Yeah, Bill Watts had him give me that damn thing for about 2 weeks straight down in Louisiana.
Oh no.
Yeah, every night. Every night. Not one, two.
Is that a rib from Watts?
There it
Jesus, man.
Take two of them a night.
I think most people know what a superplex is, but in case you don't and you're listening to this, that's where Jake would be sitting on top of the top rope and this guy would hook him for a vertical suplex from the top rope all the way down into the ring.
He would stand on the top rope.
Oh.
Yeah. and he was 6'5", 6'6". It was a long damn ways down, man.
So, I mean, just doing some simple math here, you're whatever, 6'5 yourself. So, I mean, you're crashing down whatever it is. I mean, your feet are 13 feet in the air at the top.
Yeah.
Actually, more than that, because he's on top of the top rope. So, right. So that is, that is a hell of a fall.
I'll be looking at 18 feet, 20 feet.
And you're doing two of those.
Just for a rib.
Oh, God. Brutal, man.
Yeah, just for a rib from that no good fucking piece of shit, Bill Watts, cocksucker.
We all know how much you love Bill. Stop teasing. Yeah. Those rings back then were not exactly forgiving either, were they?
They were not forgiving rings.
Now, I've heard about the rings in the South being like a little bit easier to bump on than what the, what people were experiencing up in Connecticut. Would you agree with that or no?
No.
No, it's still brutal no matter where you are.
You know, they still hurt you.
I'll bet.
You know, the rings up north were a little stout. that's why guys didn't do much in them.
No, I mean, you would see somebody take, like, I have a real memory of, like, Mick Foley getting suplexed off of a cage or something into the ring, and that ring just, you don't see it bounce or anything. It's like, he might as well just hit fucking hit cement.
The cement's probably softer.
Just, whew, no thank you. Yeah. Scott's brother, Bill Irwin, is going to go on to be the goon in the WWF while you're back with the company from 96 to 97. Jake, as a guy who once pitched a mole gimmick for Jim Neidhart, what was your opinion on the goon?
I think the goon was a great gimmick.
Did you really?
Sure. But they pushed it. You know? The guy's a ruffian, man. He's a hockey player. His whole thing is to go in there and just punch and swing. It's great.
That is not the answer I was expecting from you at all. Wow.
See, there you go.
How about that? You still say, we're over a year into this and you're still surprising me here and there.
There you go.
I mean, was the timing maybe not right for the goon gimmick? I mean, it was like the NWO was in full swing. Austin was emerging.
It's the bottom line. The bottom line is if you're going to push the guy or not. And they weren't going to ever push him. Ever. Mm-hmm. All he was done, he was brought in to be a colorful jobber. That's it. Him, TJ, Hopper.
Oh, yeah, TL.
All those guys were brought in to be job guys. They just wanted to dress him up and try to make some type of character out of him. Get more mileage out of him that way.
That is puzzling because, I mean, every time you go to a new city, there's like, there's some local promoter that you can call and get job guys from. So, like, why have them on the payroll? It's just weird.
Well, because you can trust them to do a better job than these local guys.
Okay, I got you.
Yeah.
All right, that makes sense. All right, we can go back to 1981. I just figured we ought to talk about Bill while we were there. So was it your preference to work with guys in the ring that you have familiarity with, or were you looking to get reps with new opponents? I ask because, I mean, it kind of feels like you're leaning toward working with the grappler again here like you had in Mid-South.
I would love to have done that. My God, we could have went out there and lit the house on fire. But they didn't want it.
Were you happy to get reps with new opponents, or were you like, damn, I wish I would have gotten Len instead?
You know, whatever's put out there, I'm going to work with, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to be a good product. You know, have a great match, do a finish that means something, you know, a match that means something, and keep moving forward. That's the bottom line.
So at this age, you're just young and hungry, and you're just trying to achieve wherever. Like, hey, give me whatever creative. I'll just do it as well as I can.
Yeah. That's it.
Well, by the end of this episode, we're kind of back on track creatively. The grappler is going to interfere in a match between Jay Youngblood and Ole to give Youngblood the DQ win. Yourself and Outlaw Ron Bass come out to break things up before all of you go into a promo to close the show. So, Jake, it's late September here, and now, since arriving in Mid-Atlantic in August, you've been associated with Steamboat, Leroy Brown, Ron Bass, and now Jay Youngblood. So it kind of feels like they're still trying to figure out how exactly you fit into the picture here, huh?
Yeah, and I argued I didn't want to be in a tag match. I told him I was better off in the singles.
Right out of the gate, you were saying, hey, come on, just put me in singles.
Man, I can shine in a single, but a tag match, man, I don't like them.
Yeah, it's, I mean, especially coming off your run in Mid-South, where, again, you were with Len Denton, and you were starting to kind of feel yourself as a wrestler, and now all of a sudden it's like, it has to feel like a step backwards for them to put you in a tag team as opposed to trusting you in singles competition.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. You know, in a singles match, you go out there and you paint the whole picture any way you want to. In a tag match, you'd rather start painting the picture, and the guy comes behind you and marks it off and starts a different picture.
Oh.
You know, and just totally frustrating. Totally frustrating.
Now, Jay Youngblood, however, is another dude you're going to go on to tag with while you're there in Mid-Atlantic. And Jake, I recently saw this really funny promo with Youngblood where he's doing a promo with Bob Caudle, and right in the middle of it, he says fuck by accident. He's like, this fucking guy out here or whatever. And it was great. I mean, what can you tell us about Jay Youngblood?
He's a good kid, man. You know, he just, Jay was there to have a party. A good time. Yeah, that's what he was all about, man. Sad that he's gone, but here he is.
Yeah, watching the promos with him, he just reminds me of like those guys in high school that were stoners. Like, he's just got that type of personality to him, which is, it's cool, and it kind of works. Like, he seems like an interesting character. It has been reported, though, that he could be a little bit more challenging to work with, especially when it came to deciding wins and losses in the ring. Did you ever see any of that from him?
No, I didn't.
Okay, pretty agreeable when you were around him.
Yeah.
I think it's also worth noting here that one of the guys you were working with on a few live events during this time was Jacques Goulet, who most fans are going to remember better as René Goulet. He's going to retire as an active wrestler in 1986, but he's going to work as a road agent for the WWF from 86 to 97. So I'm guessing you spent probably more time around him during that period. What can you tell us about René?
Unfortunately, I spent time around him.
Okay. Not all good memories with René.
Tough.
Why is that?
Well, he wasn't going to bump. Mm. You know, no arm drag here, you know. He got very little out of it. he'd done his time, and he just wanted to protect himself completely.
So at this period, he was just kind of an older dude, so you're treating him similarly as you would a guy like JYD, as we discussed, where you're just going to be the primary bump taker.
You're limited. Get over it.
What about as a road agent? I mean, he was there for a long time, so obviously he was doing something right.
Agent. Did a good job.
What exactly are the duties for a road agent in the WWF during, like, the late 80s? Like, are they just helping book matches, or how does that go?
Well, they set up the matches. They make sure that the guys are somewhat straight enough to have a good match.
so they're like seeing how dilated people's pupils are before they go out there.
Right. Can this guy really walk? Occasionally they'll have a drug test. And their job then is to watch the peckers.
No way. That's their job.
Yeah. They have to watch them because guys were bringing things in and cheating on the drug tests.
That's a weird spot for a guy like René to be in. Is one of the boys, or formerly one of the boys, now he's got to come up to you and say, like, hey, dude, come to the bathroom with me.
Well, he got to do that. And then another guy that got to do it was AWA champion. What's his name?
Nick Bockwinkel.
Bockwinkel.
No shit.
Yeah. In fact, the boys made a song up for him. You know, he's a better watcher. He's a better watcher. Go by. Oh my. Yeah. AWA champions, a pickle watcher.
Man, I expect us to go a lot of directions on this one, but never to Nick Bockwinkel staring at penises.
Yeah.
Oh man, what a weird position for him to be in. So you're telling me that both Nick Bockwinkel and Renee got to see the snake?
Oh yeah.
How about that? There you go. There you go, boys and girls. A little. You never know what you're gonna learn here on the show. Do you ever recall Renee helping you with creative, or was he just more like one of those guys like, oh yeah, what do you have in mind? Okay, sounds good.
Yeah.
Okay. So you weren't learning much from him. He was just
Okay.
Okay. Well, as we come into October, you continue to get shuffled around with partners. You're facing the Grappler and the Super Destroyer on live shows on October 1st and 12th. But in the first match, you'll be paired with Steve Muslin. And on the second, you've got Paul Jones. Now, do you think this was just about who is in the towns and available to work with on any given day? Or why do you think all this weird hokey pokey?
They didn't have a fucking clue, man. They didn't have a clue.
Like, it's just really bizarre, and it does seriously feel like they're just kind of booking on the fly. Like, you show up, and they're like, okay, well, Jake's here. We know he's, you know, feuding with these two. Fuck it. Steve's over there. Get in there, Steve.
Yep. That's exactly what they did.
Well, Paul Jones is a Texas boy like yourself, and later he'd go on to manage you briefly with Dory Funk Jr. in 1983. I'll admit that I don't know much about the guy, but I know he's highly regarded. Can you talk to us a little bit about Paul?
Paul was a mainstay of the Carolinas for years. You know, he put 20 years in there. So he knew something. But he was a solid worker.
Yeah, no, he had a long career, and I think a lot of fans are going to remember Paul as a manager during the latter years of JCP.
Yeah.
The Paul Jones Army. Good to work with as a tag team partner?
Anyway. Yeah, as long as you want to do all the work.
I gotcha. Okay. So that's probably going to negate my next question, which was, you know, he's been working since the 60s, so obviously this is a veteran. At this time, you're whatever, 26 or 27. Are you learning stuff from these guys? Are they offering you information?
No. No.
Nobody was trying to help you out?
No.
Like, I know that you were always great about helping young talents. So what's the mentality here?
They were lazy, man. They were at the end of the road, and they knew it, and they just wanted to hold on.
Mm.
And unfortunately, I'm trying to get going, so I had to kick it into high gear just to get something out of the match.
Oh.
Very frustrating.
So they see a young guy like you, great worker, great look, great promo, and they're just like, well, this guy's coming from my fucking spot.
They knew that I was going to keep moving.
Mm.
And probably up. And they didn't like that. They didn't like that. They would have held me down any way they could.
Crazy to think about that mindset, but I get, again, you know, I guess to paint the picture for our listeners, like, this is, you know, this is still like the days of some of these guys were working on fairgrounds, like this, you know, very carny period of time in pro wrestling. So I sort of get it where these guys are just trying to think of their own paychecks, but man, it's after a while, it's, you got to give up the damn ghost and help some younger talent.
Gets old, man. It really gets old.
Well, you're not done working with these veteran guys yet. You're going to call out Ole Anderson on TV for not defending his tag team titles in 2 months. And the next week, yourself and Paul are going to end up getting a tag team title shot against Ole and a masked partner who's calling himself the Super Destroyer. Let's drop in on the final minutes of this one. Okay, the alleged Super Destroyer has got you hooked, By the way, for our listeners, this stuff is really easy to access. You can find it on WWE Network. A lot of it is just found online as well. This is from October 1981, Mid-Atlantic Wrestling. Okay, Jake is making his way back to his feet. Tommy Young checking in on you there. Super Destroyer gives you a knee to the gut, shoots you off, reversed it, and... Oh, Jake with the big knee to the face. Oh, but he tags out right away, and here comes Ole to cut off that hot tag. Okay, Ole with the big slam on you. Misses the elbow. There's the hot tag. Paul Jones is coming in like a house of fire. Whooping Ole's ass. Beating on the Super Destroyer now. Big backdrop. Paul is coming, going after it. There we go, Jake. You're in there to help him out as Ole and Super Destroyer try to team up. There's a big knee to Super Destroyer. Ole goes down. Tommy Young's trying to get your ass out of there. You guys are ping-ponging Ole back and forth. This is good stuff. All right. Order's restored. You're back on the outside. Super Destroyer makes his way back in. Takes a big slam. Oh, now wait a minute. He's reaching down into his trunks. He's got the gimmick. He's loading his mask. Big headbutt to Paul Jones. Tommy Young counts to 1, 2, 3. That's it. You're in shock. Super Destroyer and Ole are on their way out. Okay, so... Poor Paul Jones get the screw job finish there. But Jake, that was not the Super Destroyer there at the end of the match. I'm asking you to reach back now. It's 43 years. Do you remember who the guy under the mask was for this?
I have no clue.
Yeah, that was Gene Anderson, Jake. It was. And apparently after this, they would beat up Paul and whip him, and you would unmask him, revealing to everybody that it was Gene Anderson. So, I mean, pretty cool. And I know you're not a big fan of Ole, but what did you think about stepping into the ring during this stage of your career? Again, your late 20s, and you're with a legendary tag team.
It was all right, man. You know, it was a new way of working.
Mm.
They weren't going to be high flyers. And they did a lot of hardcore wrestling, you know, really get in there and grind it out. Just a little backstory. Gene Anderson and I became roommates.
Really?
Yeah.
How?
Yeah. Just crazy shit happened, man. We became roommates. That opened the door for some wild times.
So during this period of time, you were rooming with him?
Yeah. And his wife had just divorced him.
All right.
So he wasn't in a good mood. Oh, man. Yeah.
So you're the young guy living with a veteran during this period.
Yeah.
And he's not in a great mood all the time because he had just lost his wife.
Right.
All right. So, I mean...
Bringing people through the house, you know, I mean.
Wait a minute, you're bringing people through the house?
Yeah. Have a little fun.
Okay. So you're still young and you're still trying to have a good time here in this new territory. And this dude is way older than you, probably just trying to relax.
Yeah. He's the freak of antics, let's just say that.
Oh, man. Good stuff. And it would have been your first time meeting Gene during this period, correct?
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. So this is a man you've never really been around before. He's significantly older than you, a veteran in wrestling, and you're just trying to be a young guy.
Yep.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, I think it's worth noting that Gene helped develop that traditional Anderson style of wrestling where they work on one body part and wear it down. Like, for example, they might spend the entire match working on an arm and then win the match with an armbar. So pretty basic, easy to follow for the audience, but, you know, even the basic presentation with the Andersons, they became a household name and one of the most feared teams in Mid-Atlantic. What do you think of presenting wrestling in that way?
Great.
Yeah.
Great. They were hardcore, man. They were hardcore before there was hardcore.
Yeah, I mean, the style, you know, again, these guys are coming from the previous generation. So, I mean, there is a difference in style for sure, where it kind of resembled a little bit more of a, like an amateur style, slower pace, stuff like that. So how was it adjusting to that type of ring work?
It was easy. I mean, they just beat the hell out of you.
You were the primary bump taker in that one again, and you wound up giving Paul Jones the hot tag. So, I mean, is that the position you wanted to be in, or would you have preferred to be the hot tag guy?
Well, you give him the hot tag and he gets beat.
Okay.
I guess it's not that bad of a position. You know.
And not that bad for him because he gets to come in and just lay down real quick, or not bad for you?
Not that bad for me. I didn't get beat.
Ah, okay. Which is, again, you know, it's a crucial element here in this match where you are wrestling these two veterans and you don't get your shoulders pinned. So it is a big deal. Well, we were just talking about styles, and speaking of styles, you know, I can't let one of these go by without asking you a little bit about Ole. Arn Anderson has said on his podcast, Arn, that when you worked with Ole, he gave you absolutely nothing and you had to work for everything you got. What exactly does that mean for somebody who isn't quite as familiar with the inner workings of wrestling?
It means that he's not going to put it out there on a silver platter. You got to go out there and get it.
Mm.
If you want the arm, you got to take that damn arm. And you better hold on to it, because if he gets away, he gets away. You know, he don't play around. He makes you work for it. He'll give it to you, but you're going to have to fight him for it. It's awesome, I think.
Okay.
Makes sense to me.
So it creates a sense of realism where it's like, if you snatch somebody by the arm, of course they're going to try to pull away, and that's what he's going to do. So if you want to get your arm bar in, you need to hold on for dear life.
You got to fight him for it, which makes it real.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, look, he's developed a bad reputation for kind of eating up younger guys. But I mean, like, I'm sure that that's probably just the way that he learned to do wrestling, right?
Yep.
Jake, the next week you're out on TV talking to David Crockett and Bob Cottle about the screw job at the hands of the Andersons, and you've got an absolutely legendary partner there ready to back you up. Do you remember who that was by any chance?
I don't know.
You're there paired with Wahoo McDaniel. I mean, you know, you want to talk about a damn legend. You know, you've been jumping around from partner to partner here. Being paired with Wahoo, did it have you feeling a little bit more optimistic about being in a tag team?
Damn right. Maybe feel like going somewhere.
Yeah, man. It's you can't really overstate how popular Wahoo was and what a legend he was in this territory. So, I mean, you know, it's a huge, huge thing for you to be paired with him this early in your run. Now, I've heard some guys say that they like to be paired with established veterans, but others say that they don't like it because that means that they have to adjust their style. It's safe to assume that you were good with, you know, being paired here?
It was all right. It was all right. I'd still rather be in a singles match, though.
Okay.
You know, Wahoo's great, great guy, great partner, but it makes you fight that much harder to try to get over because everybody's watching him.
And I don't imagine the Wahoo, like, you're clearly going to be the guy starting the match and taking all the bumps and then giving Wahoo the hot tag. And I don't picture Wahoo being the one to get his shoulders pinned to the mat when you guys lose to the Andersons. So, so you're coming in there doing all the work, and then at the end you're going to get pinned in all likelihood.
Probably.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned in our last Mid-Atlantic episode, the Wahoo could be tough to work against because he'd hit you anywhere between your stomach and your face with those chops. How about teaming up with him a little bit better?
Yeah, much better. You get to watch him brutalize people.
Is it you calling the matches, or Wahoo, or the Andersons, or how would that go?
It's just a street fight.
Okay, so it's you guys are just going out there throwing down.
Yeah.
Well, probably some pretty fun, believable stuff. There is no way that anybody but you is selling in a match where it's the Andersons and Wahoo McDaniel and you. I mean, it's three legends and you're the new guy. What type of pressure would that put on you to perform?
Made me fight for my life. And it was good for me.
So you felt like that was a good learning circumstance for you?
Sure. Sure it was. I had to fight from underneath and come out and still not. I had to constantly escape things that they're doing to me.
Mm.
And when you do that, it makes you stronger. You understand?
Yes.
So they had me in a corner. I'd escape out of the corner, but I wouldn't make the tag, you know. I'd let them get me back. Then I'd escape again. Somehow, some way. Maybe they'd slam me. They'd go to drop an elbow. I'd roll. See, I've escaped again. I got to my feet, but damn it, I can't make that tag because he got me blocked. So that was the lesson.
So you're doing like all the bumps and in all likelihood taking the pinfall, but you're still coming out of this looking very strong.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, it is a really good spot to be in then.
Yeah.
We've talked before about how moving from territory to territory, it afforded you the luxury of learning from a bunch of different performers with different styles and mindsets. So would you say that you learned anything while teaming up with Wahoo?
Probably did, but I can't remember what it was.
Well, let me try another similar question. Did you learn anything that you were like, hey, I am not going to do that in matches from working with Wahoo?
No, I'm not going there.
All right. I won't push the issue on that. When it came to your wrestling philosophies at this time, though, I mean, you'd done some bouncing around from Calgary and Mid-South, of course. Who would you credit with giving you the most knowledge? Your dad?
Buck Robley. Yeah.
Okay, he was the booker in Mid-South while you were there. What kind of stuff did Buck teach you?
Psychology.
So just the simple basics of the ring, essentially.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Like to call it, he told me the truth of the ring.
The truth of the ring. Being that, you know, just your position as a baby face, essentially?
Right. How to get over.
And if you understand the baby face's objectives and roles, then I would assume that understanding the heel's role is pretty easy after that.
Do you?
Now, Jake, that promo wasn't bad by any means, but you weren't quite dialed in all the way like you would be a year or two after this. Would you say that you were feeling uncomfortable on the mic at this time?
I wasn't uncomfortable, but I still hadn't found my character.
Mm.
And that was the issue. I still hadn't found out who I was. You know, I wasn't no fucking cowboy. Jesus.
Was there anybody along the way that you would credit with helping you dial in your promo style?
No.
It's just reps for you.
Yeah, it was me. Find me.
Now, I know that you did not like Ole, of course, but you both did have that same kind of delivery where you weren't going to scream and shout. It was all business all the time. You know, a simple, clear-cut delivery, what was going to happen whenever you stepped into the ring. And so I know it's tough to be objective when you don't like a dude, but what did you think of Ole's mic work overall?
Pretty damn good.
Yeah.
It was solid. Very solid. But he had a lot of years to learn that.
Yes.
And I was just getting started.
I have to agree. You know, I was unfamiliar with Ole's work mostly up until about like 2 or 3 years ago. And after I started watching him and I was like, he reminds me a little bit of Jake. He's just like very piercing stare, very straightforward. So you got to give him that. He might not be a great dude, but holy shit, he could cut a promo.
Yeah. Yeah, he can do that.
All right, before we go, I just want to leave our listeners with a little teaser for the next one. On the next episode, we're going to talk about you teaming up with a performer who is named Sweet Ebony Diamond. Jake, can you tell our listeners who Sweet Ebony Diamond was?
I'd rather not. Let them guess.
Okay, I like that idea. All right, that'll be a little teaser for next time. Yeah. Let's hit a quick fan question. We're done. Jake, it's from Peter D. Hi, Jake. I hear stories about Roddy Piper being a great guy, salt of the earth, but others say he was an insufferable prick. Were his moods dependent on his partying habits? Did you have any issues with him?
I've had issues with him, but overall, I got along with him. You know, maybe it's because I didn't press it too much.
Okay.
But no, I got along with Roddy.
One day I'm going to get you to tell the story about doing like a 3-day road trip with Roddy.
Oh, God.
One day we'll get there.
All right, bro.
Okay, guys, before we let you go, just want to remind you all that if you're looking to attract that 25 to 54-year-old male demographic to your product or service, you've got to hit advertisewithsnake.com. Jake was just back on AEW Dynamite and Collision. He's still a household name. He's still got unbelievably loyal fans. When he talks, people listen, and you can get him to talk about your stuff to the exact demographic that you're trying to target. If you want some evidence that this stuff works, just listen to our show, guys. We are always advertising for the same businesses and bringing in new businesses because they know that what we do works. Head over to advertisewithsnake.com right now and make Jake the Snake Roberts your tag team partner. Come on, that's an offer you can't refuse. JakeTheSnakeShop.com has all kinds of great collectibles straight from the man himself. Jake has got a fire sale going on there right now, but that's only while supplies last. There are some amazing sculptures there on sale from the great Sin Bodhi, and Jake is signing them all. So look, don't wait until they're all gone. Get over there right now. Take a look. If you see something you want, get it, because it's going to be gone before you know it. It's JakeTheSnakeShop.com. Get over to cameo.com/JakeSnake if you want a personal message, a promo, a birthday wish, or if you just want to say hi to the legendary Jake Roberts. Here's a recent review from Anonymous. Our old partner was retiring from the police department, and he was the perfect candidate for a roast. Jake the Snake was the ideal person for this task. He absolutely nailed it. Thank you, Snake. You are the man. Look, a lot of people are going to echo those sentiments if you go and take a look at the reviews there on Cameo. People love what Jake does. He puts a ton of effort into them, and he loves doing them, and he loves having the chance to interact with all of his fans. And look, if you're a lifelong fan, you owe it to yourself to at least check it out. Again, it's cameo.com/JakeSnake. Go and order yours right now. You've got to check out the Snake Pit page at boxofgimmicks.com. We've got all this cool-looking vintage-style 80s and 90s merch. I mean, it takes you right back to those days whenever you take a look at this stuff. And by the way, we are not done yet. Rumor has it we've got a little Valentine's Day thing coming up, so stay tuned for that because it is going to be super cool. And look, it's a big passion of mine is 80s and 90s wrestling, like many of you listening to this, and I'm trying to recapture that vibe. So we've got like WrestleFest inspired stuff, some tributes to Jake's past, you know, like lesser known parts of his career. Seriously, there's just so much there. You've got to go and take a look, and I have a feeling you're going to like what you see. Again, it's the Snake Pit page at boxofgimmicks.com. Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/@snakepitpod for some short clips from the show, some highlights, and some exclusive content. So I just want to remind you guys, if you haven't listened to that WCCW bonus episode with Baby Doll that's on our page, you are seriously missing out. It is a YouTube exclusive. That means you're never going to hear it here on the podcast. You can only get it over there on YouTube. And it is the perfect companion piece to what we did here on the show, talking about WCCW and also the release of the Iron Claw movie. So, I mean, a lot of people are talking about the Von Erichs nowadays, and you can get even more of the story behind that. Just get over to youtube.com/@snakepitpod. I have a feeling you guys are really going to love what she had to say. Also, speaking of YouTube, I want to remind you all that the Hacksaw Hour with Hacksaw Jim Duggan is now available exclusively on the Everybody's Got a Pod YouTube page. Everybody's Got a Pod, for those of you who don't know, is the other podcast I do with Ted DiBiase. And we decided that we wanted to partner up with Jim. Jim wanted a little bit more exposure on the podcast, and we thought that this was kind of the perfect marriage to put these two Hall of Famers together on one channel. Now, the first 8 episodes can still only be found on adfreeshows.com, but every episode moving forward will be on this channel. That's youtube.com/@everybodysgotapod. And by the way, we aren't just providing the podcast. Jim has also got videos of his day-to-day activities, and the first one we posted, which was a walkthrough of Jim's house, has over 400,000 views, and it's still growing. seriously, you've got to go and check it out, see what all the hubbub is about, because it is so cool to see Jim's place. And he has sent me a lot more videos that I still have to edit and put up there. So seriously, do yourself a favor, go and check it out, and make sure to subscribe to the page for more videos like that and the continuation of Jim's podcast, The Hacksaw Hour. Also, speaking of my podcast with Ted, I've got to ask you guys to go and do me a quick favor. The Sports Podcast Awards has made us one of our finalists for the Best Wrestling Podcast of 2024, and we need your vote to help us win. Just go to sportspodcastgroup.com and find us under the wrestling category. Cast your vote, and you're going to be doing us a really big favor if you help us out with that. It only takes a couple of minutes, so if you enjoy what we do, please help us out. Also, if you've enjoyed The Snake Pit, please like, subscribe, and leave us a 5-star review on all platforms, because that does Jake and I a big favor. And I want to remind you all that you can get The Snake Pit and all the other shows in our network early and ad-free at adfreeshows.com. Starts at just $9. That's it. That is pretty inexpensive for some incredible content and some really kind of irreplaceable memories and stories that you're not going to get anywhere else. Plus, there's so much bonus content, interactive chats with your favorite hosts and wrestling personalities, and so much more. I mentioned it last time, Ad Free Shows just added the new series Beyond Nitro with Guy Evans. He's the author of the Nitro book that really caught fire that Eric Bischoff personally endorses. And Guy is there providing AFS with an even deeper look into the key elements, themes, and stories discussed in that book. So if you're a fan of that Monday Night Wars era of wrestling, you've got to go and check this one out. And not to mention, how about Tuesdays with the Taskmaster with one of the greatest bookers, one of the greatest wrestling minds of all time, Kevin Sullivan, Lex Express with Lex Luger, the Monday Mailbag with Mike Chioda. There's just so much great content over there. Seriously, go and check it out. If you're a wrestling fan, I know that you're going to love it. Again, it's adfreeshows.com. Go and sign up right now and become part of the Ad Free Shows family. Catch Jake on X at JakeSnakeDDT, on Instagram at JakeTheSnakeDDT, and on Facebook at RealJakeTheSnake. You can follow me at Marcus P. D'Angelo on X, and you can follow the podcast at SnakePitPod on all social media platforms. I love looking back at the Mid-Atlantic days with Jake. It is such an unexplored part of Jake's career. I absolutely love revisiting it, hearing all these old names, getting some stories that we wouldn't otherwise be hearing, and I'm excited to continue to explore those days through the remainder of 1981 and into 1982. And I'm excited to see you guys next week right here on The Snake Pit.